yes, you know, maybe this will be a new period of dominance for Rangers. But the more I think about it, mate, like, these opportunities don't come around too often, do they? I mean, you can't time it perfectly so that, oh, it happens to be start of the season, there's a juicy job, I'm going to it. Like, Villa, I wouldn't say Villa's a step up, but it's he has to get into the Premier League in order to get the Liverpool job.
Yeah.
He's not going straight there from Jers, is he? So I think he had to take the job, to be fair.
It wasn't. I mean, it would have been better if it was like... It would have been, if he'd waited till the end of the season, he'd have had more options, to be honest. You know,
Villa need him. So it's almost like...
Does he need Villa? He could have gone to Tottenham or something like that, and that would have been a better, much better step.
I think basically that Villa's perfect, though. Tottenham's too big. Yep. If he's going to... It's almost like the ideal stepping stone. Don't get me wrong. I'm very glad Toon out of it. I think he'd be terrible for Newcastle, and I'm not convinced he'd be great for Villa either. But for him, I think that's his clever career management.
Friend of mine said, I was talking in a WhatsApp group with some friends, and a friend of mine went, "I hope they get relegated, like Villa."
That's horrible. That's horrible. Anyway, we're live, everybody. We're live. It's Brain Food Live on Air, episode 133, bringing it to you every Friday, folks. We rarely ever miss one. We've only postponed once this week. I think we're going to hit about 50-odd for the year. We're coming to the end of the year, would you believe it? There's only about four or five left of these. We're not going to do it all the way to the end of the year, Adam. So I think December's, we've only got two of them. Because I think it gets right on Christmas Eve and stuff, like, ridiculous. So there's not many Brain Food Lives left, folks. So I hope you've enjoyed the journey with us so far. As ever, a quick sound check. I just want to make sure everyone can hear me okay. The chat stream's going nuts, but that doesn't mean they can hear me. Can you hear me, everybody in the chat stream? Just quick check on audio. Give me a thumbs up. Let me know whether the audio is okay. We should be multi-streaming this across a multiple... series of things. So I'm hoping LinkedIn can hear me. If you're watching this on LinkedIn, which hundreds of you are, let me know. Give me a quick thumbs up. Let me know whether the audio is okay there. We are also live streaming on Facebook and Twitter as well, which I can't really check up on, but you know, I hope that you can hear me okay there as well. Okay, plenty of people chiming in. That looks great. Okay, a quick word to our sponsors this week. I'm really excited about this product, actually. Adam, I don't even know whether you know it, but they're a really exciting thing out of the States. Gem Software, really, you know, very highly focused on talent pipelining, talent management. Not sure whether they're an ATS, not sure whether it's a CRM. They're kind of like some sort of weird space in between. But they look like a really exciting bit of software. Great report. I shared their recruiting metrics report in LinkedIn earlier today, this week, and I really think people should download and check it out. But if you're interested in what they're calling a modern recruiting platform, check out Gem. I've had some people raving over this product. And I actually don't know too much about it, but I can tell you.
Yeah, I mean, it's a sourcing tool that goes and finds people online, brings them into your database, and then immediately sends out a sequence of communications to tell them about the job and get them interested.
Right.
That's what it does. So sourcing with a drip campaign. I wouldn't call it nurture, but sourcing with a drip campaign.
That's very interesting. I didn't realize that. I thought they were a little bit more back-endy in the sense of they were managing the applicant after they got them, but it's more proactive searching, and they'll provide you a tool to get the candidate, and then they'll have all of that sequencing plugged in. So check it out if you're interested. They're raising tons of money. You seem to be charging forward. So crack on. Okay, let's get on with the show. Adam, great to see you, man. By the way, we're just talking about, you know, the trauma of losing a key person out of your team. Adam, of course, big Rangers fan. Rangers coach Stephen Gerrard has just jumped ship mid-season to Aston Villa. And that's, you know, it's a very interesting recruiting situation. Like, how quickly do you get over the loss of a key person? How significant is the manager to the performance of the team? You know, what sense of loyalty do you have to the people you've brought into the group? And I wonder whether some of you folks who are managers and, you know, leaders of teams, how big a consideration that is when you're looking at opportunities. It's got to be something there, isn't it? To let people, not let people down, but you are kind of jumping ship. Well, you are absolutely jumping ship. And you got to balance your own interests with the team that you've managed. So, you know, super interesting stuff anyway. So Adam, listen, I hope you're okay with that. And, you know, maybe the newsletter last week has distracted you in some way in a positive sense. I hope so. Did you read it last week and was it interesting for you, man?
I did. And the first thing I wanted to touch upon was, you know, how you and I are both very big on transparency and, you know, it's important to sort of reveal all your workings and all that type of thing. So, yeah, I'm interested to know what the algorithm is for the Hall of Fame, because I appear to be now down in number 5 on that. And I'm wondering if my, 2 out of 3 weeks appearance on Brain Food Live gets me any points or not.
Answer's no. So there's no point scoring. Yeah, there's no point scoring of you turning up on this. And that's purely because the Brain Food Hall of Fame, which, by the way, all of you are welcome to join. It's kind of like a fun database of all the Brain Fooders. It's based purely on promotion of the newsletter. So if you're on LinkedIn, you're saying, hey, you signed up to Recruiting Brain Food, then yeah, you're going to get a couple of points for that. If you submit me something that I feature, you get points for that. If you share something in the group that I then feature, you get points for that. And if you write something, so you produce a bit of copy or something that I featured natively or whatever, you also get points for that. But you're right, it's not complete. There's loads of other contributions. You make loads of contributions outside of that framework that probably should be scored, but they're not scored, I'm afraid to say. So.
It was only a joke, but good to know a little bit more information about how that works.
Oh, by the way, on the Brain Food Hall of Fame, it's actually a really good database of candidates. If you're looking for a sort of a recruiter candidate, there's about 1,500 of them there. And it might be worthwhile you just having a look-see if that's something you want to do. Okay, go ahead.
Just to add to that, this is absolutely serious, because if you're looking for people that are going to do an absolutely brilliant job, you want to find, is this toxic of me to say it? But you the people that are like reading Brain Food, the people that are in the Brain Food Facebook group, the people that are in like other, they are hobbyists. They're not just doing recruitment 9 till 5. They're hobbyists. They learn about it. They want to find out more about it. They're contributing to the community. These are the people who typically are going to go above and beyond, and they're going to do an absolutely brilliant job, better than the people that stick to their job description and that's it.
I think there's a caveat to that. I mean, I'd be interested in your thoughts, folks. Like, would you look more kindly on a recruiter if they were a subscriber of the newsletter or they watched the Brain Food Lives? Would you think, okay, this person is generally, you know, more motivated? I think, you know, sort of me, obviously, as a proprietor of this, I'm very, very proud to hear these thoughts. I think it's true in certain circumstances. But it can be negative in the sense other people are like overly hobbyist in it, in the sense that they spend all their time on the group having chats with people when actually they should be doing a bit of work. And it's like, okay, there's probably a category of people that are overly invested. And I don't think necessarily that's necessarily a good sign. But then there's people at zero investment, and that's also not a good sign. Probably someone who's in the middle bucket, you know, they read a few things, they in and out, that kind of thing. They're aware of it. That would be useful, you know.
I mean, I can tell you, just on the other, reversing it slightly on the other side on this topic, we as a company, we only want to appeal to the people that are they do read things like Brain Food. They listen to Chad and Cheese. They listen to Matt Alder's podcast. These are the people that are looking for the additional 5% of, you know, enhancements in the way that they're doing things. They're not, they are, you know, work and life kind of overlaps. And they're the sort of people that I want to be talking to. So, you know, it's the same type of thing. It's a very interesting.
Yeah, I think there's angle. One thing that is true is that you know they're motivated about the industry. So that's one of the things. Like in recruitment, lots of people can get jaded, they can fade away. You know, some people have never been into it. So you know, if you're reading a work newsletter on a Sunday, let's say, chances are you're a person that's quite passionate about what you do. And you know, I guess that's got to be a good thing. You know, I don't see that can ever be negative.
Yeah, Laura's made a really good point in the chat here and said that she looks upon anybody kind, looks kindly on anyone who makes the time to expand their knowledge, whether through brain food or other methods. To me, actually, anybody that expands their knowledge about not just recruitment, but about, like, if they're doing things outside of work, you know, that they are passionate and committed to, it really says something about their character, doesn't it?
Or, you know, their lack of their lack of diversity of interest in other things, you know, too into recruiting, if there's such a thing. Okay,
so let's on the brain food. This leads me into actually the first one I wanted to talk about, which was somebody called Angelina Lee put together a fake CV and got loads of interviews. And this CV said that she went to Berkeley for university, said that she worked at Instagram, previously at Zillow, LinkedIn, and Microsoft. And not surprisingly, she got a massive, it was completely fake, and not surprisingly, she got a massive uplift in responses from recruiters saying, yeah, come in for the interview, you know, booking in interviews with her. I don't exactly know what we've learned from it, other than, yeah, I mean, if you appear to be, you know, committed to working in organizations where they're at the cutting edge, then that's probably going to say something positive about you to recruiters. However, at the same time, it kind of reinforces privilege a little bit as well, because
I wouldn't even say that. I think the only thing we learn from this is that us recruiters are very biased to name recognition. She challenged us with this fake CV, because basically what she's doing is to say, right, I'm not getting any interviews based on the stuff I'm doing now. What I'm going to do is change it so that the brand names are there, the big names are there. And does that have an uplift in all of these things? And yes, it does. And that's because that's what we look for. That is what we look for.
It's the same in every aspect of life, isn't it? Somebody says to me, have you heard the new Taylor Swift album? I might, you know, I know who she is, so I'm going to answer the question. Somebody says to me, have you heard the new Bongo Magic album? I'm going to be like, no, that's it. You know, you just naturally, you're more interested in things you've heard of.
You know what? They actually had done exactly that test with song titles, where they tested people's rating of the songs. Did you see this research? Super, super interesting. But yeah, it was the name recognition was the number one thing that caused people to vote things highly. And they were less receptive, basically, to genius songs or from artists they hadn't heard of. All of this kind of makes sense when you understand that we've got limited amount of cognitive energy, and we're going to spend more time on things we think are more likely to be rewarding. And as a recruiter, you're very busy. You're going to, you know, obviously try and budget your cognitive energy. And you're going to think, you know what, I'll spend more time on this candidate with this CV of kind of employers I recognize. I think there's a better chance I'm going to hire this person or place this person. And that's a big part of bias that we can't shake. We haven't been able to get rid of that.
Laurie's made a good point, which is you don't know what kind of a performer somebody is at these organizations. And a B player at a well-known company may not be worth their salt compared to an A player at a less well-known organization. However, what it does is it gets you in the door. That name recognition immediately catches the eye. The recruiter doesn't need to go and research who is this company. Because if you work for a company nobody's ever heard of, they've got to do more work. It's as simple as that. And if they've got to do more work, you might go to the side, while people with Google and Amazon and stuff are all just going to this side, which is for interview.
Yep, that's it. There's a disaligned incentives, basically. As recruiters, we want to make hires. We want to present candidates that the hiring managers can go, wow, well done. Well done on finding this person. In our assessment, we're more likely, we think the hiring manager is more likely to have that reaction if that person's coming out with the, you know, employer brands that everyone recognizes. And that was basically the test that this lady, who I don't even know whether she's called Angelina Lee, it may even be a fake thing, but it was a really interesting in-production test as to response rate based on brand recognition on CV. Really worth reading the Twitter thread that I shared on the chat stream there, if you want to follow up on that. I just think it's educational, and it's a problem for us as an industry. How do we fix that? You know, that's something worth us spending some time on. Okay, yep. Give us a couple more.
Okay, I liked Video My Job's annual use of video in recruitment. report. Mm. And the thing that I thought was very interesting is, I can't remember the exact statistics, but it was roughly 2019, 57% of respondents to their survey had an active video program within mm-hmm. their recruitment. And 2 years later, it's 68%, a further 21% who have got plans to implement within the next year. So that takes it to like 89% of respondents they're expecting in a year's time will be saying they've got active video within their recruitment. I think there's probably likely to be the type of person, just going back to the type of person that's going to take part in a video my job survey, is likely to be the type of person that is spending time researching these things, and they've got a more sophisticated approach to tools and process. Mm-hmm. So there's probably it's not quite reflective of the entire market, I wouldn't expect. But at the same time, it's great to know that it's going up, because I can tell you from my research, my data, in fact, video is by far the best performing content format. And if you're not all over it at every stage, from first time they've ever heard of your company, right through to the point where, like, the day before they start in the job, you need a video intervention, like, at every touch point.
You know what? I know you're an evangelist of video, so am I. I think we all have to be now. You know, especially with this shift to this distributed. We don't want to just consume text all the time. We want to see a little bit more interactivity, particularly from, as we talked about last week, you know, employees doing the job. So yeah, really interesting report by Video My Job. They do this annually, so it's like one of those things that you can compare over time. I've just shared it in the chat stream there again. Just download that report. There's no email gate on it. It's just worth chewing over and having a bit of a feel as to what the rest of the market is doing. And it might give you some inspiration to go ahead and do something of your own as well. Okay, give us one more, man.
I like the way that they've basically given you all of the like ways to get budget as well. So they've gone, right, here's the reasons why people are buying it, and to do with, you know, better candidate experience, better candidate engagement, impact on, they use the word quality. I don't really like that, but candidate quality, I guess it means best fit, that type of thing. Reduction in cost as well was in there. So yeah, I like that. Okay, one more. Let's talk about the fact that job postings are up almost everywhere in the Western world. And some of the jobs which were up the most, I found really interesting. Aviation, I'm not at all surprised, because, of course, there was no aviation industry this time 12 months ago, or next to none outside of emergency services. The next one was sports. So again, I'm not hugely surprised, because, you know, there was a hiatus in, you know, sports league competition and all that type of thing. And of course, people working in, I guess, things like ticketing and security and all that sort of stuff, that'll all have been massively down. Loading and stocking, I couldn't quite understand. That was the third one. I don't know why that would be up, other than the fact that people are not wanting to, like, a lot of people are just not applying for jobs just now. Mm. And that's like an emergency service almost, isn't it? Loading and stocking. So it may simply be there's not enough people in the market, and that's why number of job adverts have gone up. And then the last two are vets, as in people to look after your animals. I can't get my head around why that would be. And then the fifth one was HR. So, yep. I mean, if HR is including recruitment jobs, then, yeah, I can see why that's in there. Vets, I'm not sure. I don't understand that. But the others are kind of logical.
I think they're all there for different reasons. And one of the by the way, Hiring Labs on the Indeed blog. So Indeed do a really, really good series, consistent series on market data. And I think it's really worth spending time on it. Hiringlabs.indeed or something like this. It's the blog from their data science team, basically. And they're reporting to say, okay, here are the job categories or the sectors that have just shot up in terms of increase in volume. I think it's a good lesson for us to learn about how to read stats as well, because if something's starting from a low base, it doesn't need that many jobs for it to suddenly just spike up to be very, you know, high in terms of percentage growth. And of course, a lot of those segments are the industry sectors that simply weren't hiring at all over the last 18 months. So you mentioned stuff like the stock handling and stuff like this, where there was retail, hospitality, all those types of jobs that really were furloughed and shut down. Of course, they're now going to spike up because there's a need to get those staff, as well as an aversion from those staff to actually do those jobs. So that, there's also a labor reallocation away. But yeah, HR was interesting. It brings us on to this topic. How difficult it is to hire recruiters. I don't think we need to be sold on the idea it's hard to hire for recruiters. I think everyone's trying to do it. Every company that's growing is trying to grow by hiring people to do it. But it turns out that recruiters are scarce commodities, which is why, Braintree's been trying to throw some solutions to it, or at least some options to it. The Braintree job board's been out there. That's been going great last couple of months. I'm doing this recruiter survey, trying to figure out what the recruiters think about what an attractive job is. 1,100 completed responses on that so far. Target is 5,000. So if you haven't done the survey yet, please go ahead and do it. I want to try and close the data collection by the end of this month. So we've got 2 weeks. But I think it's possible to get to 5K, which would be really, really strong results. And then we'll be able to say, okay, recruiters are generally saying this about what they want in terms of job design. Which leads us to this topic. What do recruiters want? Whenever you can't hire a candidate or you can't hire a particular type of person, yes, we need to think about the candidate shortage. But what it is that you're doing as a business that's making the candidate say yes, maybe, or definitely not? Is there any kind of component to this? And this is why we're going to get these guests on from different sectors of the industry, and they're going to help us with it. But before we do that, just don't want to throw the question over to you, Adam. I mean, do you have any thoughts yourself as to what a good recruiter job is?
No, I can't answer that question because it's a different thing to different people, isn't it? So you've got to attract the right people for that job and repel the wrong people for that job. And the obvious split is in-house versus agency. It's not really the same job. It's got, 50% overlap in job, not even, probably 30% overlap in actual activities that you would be doing on a day-to-day basis. Probably 30% is about right. And so I'm interested to know if the research you're generating, presumably you are splitting it in-house versus agency, and then maybe splitting it, big companies and smaller companies, or?
Yeah, it's a 16-page, 10-minute sort of survey. So I'm collecting tons of data. I apologize for the lack of logic, by the way. The next time I'll do it, I will kind of spider off into different pathways. But the idea is to try and collect information from anybody who is currently a recruiter, and then identify, okay, are they in-house at the moment? Are they agency side? Are they embedded somewhere? Do they think of themselves as a different thing altogether? Do they move around these functions? Let's see what they think. So hopefully we've collected the right data from the right people, and we'll be able to present something to say, okay, it looks like agency recruiters in Burnley look for this more than that. Maybe that's a good spot to start hiring people from, so it's going to be an interesting one.
Yeah. Okay. So I can tell you, I know recruiters who at one end of the spectrum, they only have one motivation, which is how much money am I going to take home at the end of the month? Yep. And then at the other end of the spectrum, I know recruiters who want to work for companies that have got, or it's not even necessarily companies, for organizations that have got the purpose that is the most aligned with their life purpose. And they'll sacrifice money for that. They'll sacrifice all sorts of things for that. And then in the middle, of course, other motivations will be things like work-life balance. Will I get trained really well? What are the career growth opportunities? What is the variety, that I'll get on a day-to-day basis? So there's so much in this, and I'm really looking forward to getting our guests on to talk about it in a bit more detail and find out their thoughts. Any talent sourcers in Glasgow? Candidate IDs hiring one?
Are you really?
By the way, Yes.
I didn't know you were. Listen, you can post the job on the Brain Food Jobs Board. And the only price, there's a free option now because I want people to do the survey. And I know you're tight, Adam. So free should mean good things for you. If you complete the survey or you help distribute the survey, then yeah, you can. I'll allow you to post a job for free there. So boom, get on it.
Did you hear that national stereotyping that we got in there? Because I'm not tight at all.
No, you personally, mate.
I'm just Scottish.
I separate you from the Scots, mate. I think the Scots are great, but you're a particular type of Scot. All right, let's get our guests on because we've got guests from the in-house embedded side and also agency side as well, rec to rec. I want to hear from them. They're speaking to recruiters every day as candidates. So these people should be able to tell us a little bit about what they're hearing. So let's go ahead and do that. We're going to bring everyone on at the same time. Let's go with Julia first. Let's see if she's here. Okay, great. Yeah, we need Robert. Robert Nunn, is he? Oh, he's not here. Has he dropped off? I think Robert has dropped off. Or maybe he's Rob. Oh, yeah, it's Rob. Sorry. God damn, nicknames. And I think Charlotte is here. Was she just Charlotte? I think she was just Charlotte on here, was she? Okay, there we go. Oh, there's Julia. How are you?
Hi, everyone. I'm doing great. It's Friday. How about you?
Yeah, we're great.
Hi, everyone.
Hi, Robert.
How are we doing?
Good, good. Whilst we're waiting for Charlotte to get on, why don't we introduce ourselves? Julia, would you like to introduce yourself to the crowd for the folks who don't might not know you?
Absolutely. Hi, everyone. My name is Julia. I'm based in Berlin, working as the tech talent acquisition lead for Wayfair Europe, platform engineering, more exactly. Just joined Wayfair actually 2 months ago, ex Zalando, for people that know Zalando here around. Super happy to chat today on this topic, which is pretty complicated, I would say. But let's see.
Absolutely, because you've actually been like kind of seconded to try and hire recruiters for the team, haven't you? So that kind of experience, I think, is super interesting. Okay, Robert, go to you. Quickly introduce yourself. Who are you? What it is you do?
Hi, Hung. Thanks. Yeah, I'm Robert Nunn. I manage the internal recruitment team at Element. And we are the pioneer and leading embedded talent acquisition consultancy. We have over 200 talent acquisition consultants at the moment and spread across the globe from London, Sweden, Singapore, KL and New York. And other areas in the US as well.
And your job is to hire those consultants, isn't it? So you are speaking to recruiters every day to try and bring them into the business.
My team and I, yeah.
Okay, great. Let's go to you, Charlotte. Who are you and what it is you do?
Yeah, so I'm Charlotte Doherty. I'm co-founder of the Doherty Group. So we are a rec-to-rec. So we predominantly work with agency recruitment professionals, but also talent acquisition. And we work globally. So we do a lot of work in the UK, US and Australia, as well as the Middle East. And a lot of our business would be around agency recruitment professionals that want to take their career internationally.
Yep, fantastic. So I think we're looking at different types of person. We're looking at recruiters, potentially moving down different channels. I think this is going to be really exciting for us to explore what it is recruiters want. I mean, so diving into it straight away, has there been a general theme, like a consistent thing these candidates are telling you when you're interacting with them? What's the emerging thing that you're saying, you know what, this is now becoming so consistent, it more or less is a mandatory expectation from these recruiters that I'm interacting with? Any thoughts on that? It's an open forum. Whoever's got a thought, please pipe up.
I would say 100%, like since COVID, like absolutely the first thing that we get asked by candidates is like, what's the work from home policy? Is it remote? Yeah. Is it flexible? Like before COVID, so my business that I've had now for 7 years has been a fully remote based business, massive believer in it. But pre-COVID, the amount of clients on the agency side I would get that would have never even considered like work from home, remote, flexible. It was all about being in at the desk on the phone. Now it's the very, very first thing candidates ask. How many days do I have to be in the office? Can I work from home? Can I choose? Could I do it remotely? And also now we're getting more and more questions being asked about work from anywhere options. So a lot of companies are starting to offer 1, 2, 3 months of the year, like work from anywhere, go pick yourself up, go to New York, go to wherever you like, work from there. So those type of topics wouldn't even have been broached or really kind of talked about sort of pre-COVID, but are now absolutely essential.
And you know, Charlotte, what are the trends? What was happening 2 years ago, 1 year ago, today? Are more companies offering work from home and work from anywhere? Or
absolutely. I think, to be honest, to be competitive in the market now, if you're not offering a flexible working from home policy, you're going to get behind fast. And we have a couple of clients, very small number now, that are trying to hold on, cling on to this. We have to be in the office. And I cannot get candidates to look at it because people want to be. The COVID experience showed that the job can be done and that people do work from home. We're not all on our jollies having a good time. Like, people can be really productive, if not more productive, you know. And I think that trust, the company's kind of built that trust. And now moving forwards, very common we see is like 2 and 3, 2 days in the office, 3 days from home, or 3 days in the office, 2 days from home. But again, for a lot of people, they're more like, I just want the choice. Like, some people are like, I could choose 1 week to come in 5 days. The next day week, I might come in 2 days, but it's my choice. And that's what they're looking for, to be trusted with that. And companies they are coming to the table with it.
I fully agree. Sorry, Robert.
Let me just intercede. Charlotte, are you at the point where you might be turning clients down if they won't move their position? Like, is it now becoming an unrealistic job for a recruiter to recruit against? Sometimes they have the laundry list ideas, like unrealistic job spec. If I take this on as an agency, a supplier, it's going to be a waste of my time. Someone's coming in, they're hardcore in the office. Is that at the point where you're saying, sorry, we're not supplying to you?
Yeah. I mean, we're really upfront. Like, I literally go down the route that that's wonderful. You can join my list of contingent clients, but I will be hands up honest with you. The likelihood is you're not going to get anyone from me. The only exception to that would be when we look at like rookies and grads. But even then, companies are still thankfully not doing the 5 days a week, 8 till 6, grill them. They are like, okay, maybe 1 day a week from home or 2 days a week from home, or, you know, certainly maybe in the initial period, it's X amount of time in the office with flexibility. They're just really seeing that that's an essential now, that they have to offer it. And yeah, absolutely. We walk away from stuff that, you know, companies that are now mandating the back to office.
Very interesting. Robert, I interrupted. Go ahead.
No worries. I was just going to Charlotte's absolutely spot on. It's having that flexibility, but it's as employers, you've got to be careful not to dictate what that flexibility is. And employers and employees need to have the same understanding of that flexibility, because some employers will say, I want you in 2 days a week, and that means Monday and Friday. Whereas an employee might think, well, 2 days a week, I fancy Wednesday and Thursday. You've got to be aligned on that. And I think, I think about 1 in 20 conversations, recruiters are saying, well, actually, I want an office, because we offer YOY sort of work from anywhere. And we've got quite a few new people up in Scotland now. And there's about 15 across Glasgow and Edinburgh. And they're coming together on their own, finding workspaces to just socialise. And recruiters, I think, are sociable creatures and do want that social interaction and have a choice.
I was about to say, because Charlotte, I wonder if I think back to when I was like starting in recruitment in 1999, I wouldn't have wanted to work for a company where everybody works from home. I would have wanted to work for a company where everybody works in the office, because there's always somebody to go to the pub with at 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
You know, that type of thing. So I wonder if like 22-year-olds today may want to actively work for a company where everybody is meant to work in the office. And so they've got that buzzy atmosphere and the camaraderie and the fun and the blend of social and work life. I wonder if people actually want that. And that could give you competitive advantage at the early careers kind of level.
So we are doing a good bit of work at the moment with grads and rookies on a retained basis with a number of clients. And even grads and rookies, it's one of the first things that we get asked is like, is there a flexible work from home policy? Admittedly, I would struggle to think the number of grads that say to me, I want to be fully remote, like I don't want to ever see my team. Doesn't really happen. They do want to get that team environment. They want to get all those social aspects. But I think it's just more that the mindset has shifted from people just not wanting to be locked in to Monday to Friday, 8 till 6. Like they just want to know that the options are there. That's, I think, the biggest shift, even on the junior side.
You know what? All of this is super interesting, but there's some kind of companies that may have made a commitment, and there's lots of people watching this, and I think they're in that boat where their business has said, you know what, policy is, we're in, and they're confronted with this scenario. It's like, how do we do this? Very interested to know what sort of techniques might be used to approach. Yulia, bringing you in on this, I'm not sure what the policy is at Wayfair, like how flexible the work situation is, or whether the expectation is that the TA team comes into the office. Can you give us a bit of background as to what the policy is currently and how you think that is affecting your attractiveness as an employer of recruiters?
Absolutely. We're in a remote setup at the moment. However, no one is obliged, right, to come at any point in the office. Probably the direction is hybrid. So we're thinking about having a 1-2 days in the office and the rest remote. So it's unlikely that we will ever come back to what we call, you know, working from the office. But ultimately, I think we don't have a final decision, right? I would say people start coming to the office. So we're there, especially my team, you know, is there once per week and we're absolutely enjoying it. But we do feel that, you know, whatever is more than 2 days, it's becoming a bit too much, right? So we really got used to certain personal routines, right? Like people do sports, people, you know, have certain schedule with their families. And coming back to the office for, let's say, 4 or 5 days per week, this just simply doesn't work. And it's really obvious.
Yeah, it's a big, big trade-off, isn't it? Massive trade-off. Yeah. I actually went out of the house. Like, I've totally become a home person. So I actually left the house. Like, I leave the house and I think, oh my God, what am I actually doing? Like, walking on the street. But I came back yesterday and realized, well, I just blew like 3 hours worth of potential work because I was walking to this place, meeting this person for a coffee, and then I walked back. And I was thinking, wow, that's actually really expensive in terms of time. I could have been more productive or whatever. And it's made me think, you know what, my working rhythm has been sort of dictated now by being more or less constantly available to do what I need to do via the computer. And any big moment where I'm taken out of it actually throws on a huge amount of time that I've got to chase back in some way. So I know now I have to do 2-3 hours more on Saturday because of those 3 hours I spent yesterday meeting my friend. So Michael, I blame you for my poor weekend. But go on to this. Let's talk about how we find candidates. So discovering recruiters, finding who they are. Are we like super available to find, at least? I think we are visible on stuff like LinkedIn, aren't we? Are we still using LinkedIn as the primary source to identify candidates? And if so, what's your approach? Like, how do you go ahead and talk to these people? Rob, go to you with this first
lead. Yeah, I mean, 100% LinkedIn is the number one source. And it's about that personalization of message, and A/B testing different types of messages, different with different geographies and seeing what works. I mean, we've definitely seen in our stats that, you know, earlier in the year we were getting 20 positive responses for every 100 reach outs. It's now down to 10. You know, it's getting harder. So that data you released yesterday, was it, from Gem? It's all about the follow up and maybe 2 or 3 follow ups before. It's okay, this person's not interested in. But yeah, follow up, make sure that you have an appealing message, a compelling message, follow up. And, you know, if they're not responding on LinkedIn, find other communication methods. What are the socials are they on? Find an email, that sort of thing. But yeah, I mean, we're another key channel for us. And we're lucky we've got over 200 recruiters is referrals. You know, we've invented the term Netflix and source, you know, and there's cash rewards for the team if they do find people and they spend their evenings sourcing recruiters for us.
Yep. Excellent. So go ahead, Charlotte.
I was going to say, I think it's definitely the follow-up is absolutely essential, but even more so than that, I think it's about community building. So community building, like long-term networking, like I think some of the candidates that we've placed, you know, there'll be candidates that I've been speaking to for 3 years, like long times. So it's not just even the follow-up, but it's the continual follow-up,
for sure. Yeah.
Like the continual connection. And massively into personal branding, brand promotion, brand awareness. Like we've made, you know, probably about 3 years ago, I think, when we started the podcast and everything, you know, we made a real long-term strategy to go, well, look, we want to develop a network. We want to develop a community. We want people to know about us and our brand and what we do. And now, even in this market, exceptionally candidate-type market, you know, we do get a lot of inbound from the back of that, from people seeing us speaking at the agency expo or hearing the podcast. And I think anyone that doesn't have a super solid marketing strategy around inbound and increasing your brand awareness, you're just going to be stuck in this transactional hamster wheel, you know?
100%. Mark Barnicote at Oasis Search before COVID, he was very good at that. You know, he had a very strong sort of social network and network alliance within HR professionals as well. So completely agree with that.
You know what? I think that's totally right. Like you build an audience long term. But you two, to be fair to you two, Robert and Charlotte, like you, your job is 100%, your companies are 100% focused on pointing towards recruiters. But you think you got most people are more like Yulia, you know, whose business is they're recruiting software people, they're recruiting product managers and all this. They can't be turning their entire marketing towards what is still quite a small niche. So, Yulia, what has been your approach to try and get people to work for the business? Has there been anything that you found is particularly effective, or have you been surprised at certain things that have stopped working for you given the conditions of the market?
Sure. I think it's a moment, you know, when it's of particular importance for hiring managers like ourselves, right, to be truly present and out there on the market. So, you know, talking to people, for instance, being here today, honestly, I think it's a good moment to kind of, you know, start leading with empathy before having your people in their seats, you know, making yourself know as the leader, your style, understanding what recruiter wants. And really being authentic. So I think this is what works for me. I'm starting to having a lot of authentic conversations. Yes, I do sourcing on my own on LinkedIn. You know, that's something that I do it all the time. So it's not just because, hey, I'm hiring now. It's just by maintaining a dialogue, really understanding what's out there on the market, but also going to events, right? Again, being present over here, right? And sharing a bit of myself. And that works, to be honest. That works very well.
You know what? I've just had a brainwave. I wonder whether any of these big events organizers are actually thinking about this, because you know, the likes of IHR and the firm and recruiting events companies, they get like hundreds, maybe even thousands of recruiters turning up to their events. Like, why don't they kind of like do a sort of agency kind of thing there? You know, like anybody who turns up and gets hired, actually, we're gonna, you know, slap some, I'm gonna expect an invoice coming at you, that kind of thing.
A hiring event at the end of it.
Yeah, it is. I mean, why not just formally make it a hiring event so that you can say, right, people turn up, we're gonna do an event, do talks, do networking, all the rest of it. But what's gonna happen is, like, if you hire someone from meeting them in this space, then actually, you know, it's a small whatever it might be, or maybe you even do it on ticket price. If you're, let's say you're an employer, you wanna, you know, typically it's like recruitment tech vendors that are presenting there. But let's say Wayfair decide to come into that situation and say, actually, we're using this as a recruiting opportunity. You just pay it like a stand or something, whatever the normal sort of fee would be. Probably not massive, but you might be able to acquire a few candidates that way.
Yeah, at least 15 RL100 members have hired each other this year.
I wanted to I just wanted to pick up on something that Yulia said, I think, around the authenticity. And I think that is really, really key. And that, you know, plays into sort of the marketing and the message to your market. So, a real, you know, whether you are a business that is purely focused on recruiters or you're like, say, a head of TA, your market message should still be centered around attracting recruiters, you know, but getting yourself out there, adding value, getting involved in that sort of community and network and being authentic and genuine. When I think about candidates that we have that maybe are down to like two or three final offers, it always normally comes down to, well, who did I buy into the most? Who did I see as like inspirational or aligned to my sort of values and my goals, who I feel like I could learn from, who was authentic and genuine? Like, you know, I think you've got to display that to like stand out in the market, because there's so much noise and there's so many options. Like, you have to put yourself out there. Like, you've got to be willing to do that if you want to attract the best.
I don't mean to contradict you, Charlotte, because I think you're correct. I wouldn't even dare contradict you, to be honest with you. But, something's just like popped into my head, and it's going to pop out again unless I say it now. So I've got to say it. Where are we at with salaries? Like when a customer comes to you, Charlotte, or a hiring manager comes to you, Yulia, or even, you know, someone set your budget. Like, when do you look at that and balk and think, actually, that number's way too low? Like, what is, to you, Charlotte, first, that's the question to everybody. But to you, Charlotte, let's say someone's looking for a senior consultant who's an autonomous operator, individual contributor. You know, what kind of salaries are we looking at in commission schemes? Have they changed in any way over the last 12 to 18 months that's worth remarking on?
Yeah, I mean, salaries are definitely going up, like definitely. In the last probably like 5 months in particular, salaries almost kind of getting like a little bit silly, but that's just indicative of how tight the market is right now. Like, someone that would have, say, had like, I'm just going to pick a figure out in the air, say a 30 grand salary or something pre-COVID, could now probably even drive themselves up to like 40 grand, like just purely because people just need people. So salaries have kind of got a little bit crazy. Commission structures, it does come down to the commission structure, obviously, the salary. And, you know, different agencies will have the discretionary bonus and the higher base, and then other ones have the lower base, and then they have the stronger commission structure. But again, it comes down to the person, the type of person, their background, their experience, what drives them, whether they are, how much money can I take home? I'll take the commission. Salary is like a minefield, an absolute minefield. But general consensus, you're going to pay more now, definitely, because it's so, so tight.
Yeah, 25% increase is not probably unheard of in this market, even though that's like really weird in any other scenario. By the way, our friend Greg Savage recommends strongly against like inflating base salaries, even regardless of market conditions. I think he probably is right, because you'd end up overpaying people because you're so desperate to hire them. But then you have a problem long term. With someone who's kind of earning too much for your business value,
it throws everything out of whack. And I always sort of advise with my clients, you know, get creative. You know, you don't have to necessarily come out with like the highest figure, but get creative with even mapping out that career progression process. So like, look, we're going to bring you in at this, we're going to quickly get you up to speed to the next level, you're going to hit that salary bumper. Like, look at all the other things you can offer as a holistic package, rather than fixating on a set base figure.
Yeah. Okay, folks, if you have any questions for our guests, whether it's Charlotte, Yulia, or Robert, please ask the question at the bottom of the screen. There's an ask a question feature. We'll get to that in a moment. So use that feature, pop your questions in there. Okay, Yulia and Robert together, because I'm not sure how the TA or the salary or the compensation structure operates within your teams, but I'm assuming there might be some banding structures in there where you say, okay, you know, this group comes in at this point. Have you felt any pressure in this? Like, are the candidates no longer like fitting into the banding? What's your thoughts on this? Yulia, go to you first.
Yes. To be honest, that's not necessarily my experience. I mean, we have clear salaries, right? There are grades, there are ranges. At some level, we have a stock component as well. And we were able to kind of play with the bands as they are, right, and get the right talent into our organization. We're also cautious, to be honest, because we do not want to inflate the salaries. We know that a situation on the market that probably won't last forever, and we want to be also fair against the current team members, right, that we have in the team. Meaning, you know, I'm having interviews with people that are rather junior and inquire for salaries that probably, you know, mid-level or even principal recruiters in my team are earning. So I think we need to be fair, right, for the people that are already in the team. Yeah, so that's
How are you, Rob? What's your experience of this? Are you feeling pressure on the banding, I guess?
Not so much. I mean, we made the decision almost 6 months ago to move to 100th percentile payer. So from January, everyone in the business will be between 90th and 110th percentile of what we do for a living. And we do have bandings. We offer grades 1 to 5, and we only go out externally for grades 2 and 3 predominantly. And seldom people come in right above the top of grade 3, and that primarily because their experience is probably a grade 4, if we're honest. But we just don't hire externally for grade 4s. So, you know, we try and thrash that out early on in the conversation, but it's the interview process that we follow that will identify where they are against everyone else in the business. But yes, I mean, I had a conversation, or I had an email exchange with someone in New York who had 2 years experience, and his expectations were just, it made my eyes water. He was well over 6 figures he was asking for.
Ooh.
And it was just, I guess he was pushing his luck a little bit, but, you know, I think one thing that has changed, not necessarily this year, but certainly from a few years ago, certainly when I moved from agency to in-house, I expected my income to drop because I wasn't getting that commission. But now people that we're hiring from agency are taking their base and their commission and saying, right, I want that to come in.
Yeah.
But I'm not entirely sure that's a this year problem. I think it's the last couple of years that we've seen that.
Let's talk about that shift agency to in-house, because that's usually had the direction of travel, isn't it? Rarely do you see in-house people go back to agency. There are a few people who've done that. But most of the time, it seems that the direction of travel is agency to in-house or stay in agencies. Like, those are the two pathways that you take on. What you're saying, Rob, is that actually that's becoming tougher, because actually the agents are probably having a great market, because it's, you know, any candidate short market is actually good for agencies, much better than having a candidate short market, and it means that they're sort of have inflated their own expectations. Were they too shift in-house? They're reluctant to compromise on the salary.
I mean, we're not experiencing overinflation of salaries. I'll be quite upfront about that. You know, more so than a year ago potentially. But, you know, people move. We covered this last time I was on, you know, the shift from agency to in-house. But it's people that want more out of their recruitment career than just do more, sell more, earn more money. You know, they want to learn and feel valued and have that variety and build a career. And that they will trade that off for the commission.
Yep, absolutely. Let's talk about speed. In a candidate short market, you can't sit on candidates. What is a process that is, you think, is optimal in terms of numbers of like interviews and how quickly, what the distance between first contact and offer? Give us a number of days that you think that is a good process in this market. Let's go around the table. So go to you again, Rob, first with this.
Yeah. So, I mean, we have 3 official stages. There might be some initial courting or you know, we sell to you or pitch to you, and then it's a phone screen, it's a technical domain interview, and then it's a final. Ideally, we want, you know, the idea is to do that within a week, no longer than 10 days. Is the reality of that with everyone's calendars going off? You know, it might stretch to 2 weeks, but any more than that, people are being snapped up elsewhere and
off the boil.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you're talking about 7 days, basically. This has got to be closed within a week's worth of effort, basically. And if you're like doing a 2 week process, 3 week process, that's like, look, you're wasting your time. This person's gone. If that's the level of time you're talking about.
We're very thorough at the top of the funnel. So the pre-screen, the pitch call, whatever you want to call it, identify are they real? Are they actually looking for a move? And you know, get their buy-in from that call before we put them to the technical interview, so that we know the process is going to be smooth. They're going to be bought in. They're going to be engaged, and they're going to see it through to a conclusion.
Yeah, excellent. How about you, Yulia? What's your have you developed your own internal thoughts, as like almost an SLA with yourself? Like, how quickly do you need to do this?
Oh yeah, I tend to agree with Robert here. I think we need to speed up, honestly. Normally we would have 3 steps, but I reduced those to 2 steps. One is directly an interview with myself. Second would be 4 interviews, but all happening preferably either on the same day or 2 days, right? In total, I do not want to spend more than 7 to 10 days. Otherwise, I'm at risk of losing the people. And I actually already have experience with it. I didn't have a chance to mention, but I'm talking to people that already have, you know, 3-4 offers on the table, mid of the process, which is...
Yeah, you're never the only one talking to candidates.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, never.
Super interesting. Charlotte, go to you, because obviously you're advising sort of customers, and I'm sure you've emphasized to them, hey, listen, you've got to be really quick. Are they responding to that? Are they sensitive to the idea that they need to just go quick and start making offers? Or do you get people... Go on.
Yeah, I was going to say, so on the grad and junior market, yeah, it's super fast. Like, it can literally be speak to someone, represent, interview the next day, second phone call offer, like 3-4 days, super, super fast. For the grads and juniors, for sure. For more experienced, it's still pretty fixed around the 3 stages, usually including a business plan or a presentation, but certainly local to local, they make that pretty quick. It can all be within sort of a week, you know, just over a week. But on the international market, because we do a lot in the international space, we're definitely looking 2-3 weeks on an international. But of course, your sense of urgency and your timelines are totally different, because, you know, all clients are going to be taking that long. The candidate's not going to be moving for X amount of period. They've got visas. They've got all manner of things kind of going on. And it's usually a much bigger decision, because they are also affecting their personal life by moving country and all that sort of thing. But I would say local to local is still pretty fast, but 3 stages, unless it's kind of grads or rookies.
Well, I think the message is very clear. It looks like it's 2 stages and do it in a week. And if you're hiring manager, or if yourself, you haven't got it sort of sorted to do it in that way, that's probably one of the first things to fix, because you're going to be behind everyone else if you don't move at that pace. Okay, folks, before I forget, we always try to use this session to, we want basically people to continue to have this conversation, even after the show finishes. Because we're all interested in the topic. Let's not have Brain Food Live be the bottleneck for this. Everyone who signed up to this show, who's watching it now, is very interested in the idea of what recruiters want. So now is the moment where I want you to share your LinkedIn profile into whatever chat stream you're in and connect with everyone else who happens to be here. That way you can talk to other people that are interested in the topic area. Don't let like our time zone, or, you know, the need for me to take a bath in, you know, half an hour, stop us from continuing to have this conversation. So take a moment, share your LinkedIns, get connected with everybody. Make sure you continue the dialogue as you go forward. I would also share my LinkedIn, but I've been like at the top, like I've been basically blasted out in terms of connection availability for a long time. And it's like super annoying to build up a list of people that I can't say yes to. So don't do it for me, but connect with everyone else, please. That would be a great way to keep the conversation going. Okay, let's talk.
I was just going to say I'm blasted out of connections as well. So follow.
Wow, another 30K-er. Big cheer on that, Charlotte. That's awesome. Okay, what we've got to do, folks, is also talk about something that Charlotte mentioned, the remote or international aspect. Isn't that a huge opportunity for us? Like, okay, it's hard to hire someone in London, in Berlin, or whatever it is, you know, in a traditional sense. Okay, why don't we just say, these people want remote. Okay, we'll go remote. We'll hire somebody in Johannesburg, or let's go to Minsk, or let's go to, you know, Bogota or something. Have we like aggressively explored the idea of hiring people where they are, not moving them, and saying, look, we're going to start building recruiting capacity wherever there's talent? Yulia, what's the policy at Wayfair? Is this something that's already been formalized, yes, no, as a policy, or is this something you might be exploring?
We're probably not exploring all locations. So from a legal perspective, we need to have an entity, right, in the location where the people are being hired. So meaning, obviously, if we're now, let's say, in Germany, it's not that people need to necessarily move to Berlin. They can be based in Stuttgart, right, and work from there. So that's legal. It's okay. South America or anything like that wouldn't work, right, because we're not present there. So the more Wayfair will expand, right, and be present in those locations, for instance, this will become the reality. So the answer is yes, at some point.
Yeah, very interesting. And the jobs are going to move, folks, or we will move with the jobs. You know, the digital nomadism idea. I mean, Charlotte, I think you mentioned it really early on. Why would you not want to spend 3 months in the Western Cape? Of course you would. Okay, Robert, go to you. What's the exploration here? Because the embedded models, like, super interesting, because at one point you were physically embedded, right? It was you're going to be on site. Now everyone's distributed, so that suddenly changes things. Are you now thinking, okay, why do we need to recruit people, particularly physically here, when they're never going to be physically on site to the customer? They just got to be time zone, the communication's got to be right, boom, we can hire them anywhere.
Yeah, time zone, so, you know, on top of Mount Kilimanjaro is probably not doable because of connections. But, you know, we partner with a third-party provider that will bypass that, not having an entity in country, and we'll use a company called Deel that allows us to pay people wherever they are.
And Deel, you know, are a payrolling like unicorn. I mean, they're trying to fix exactly this problem. Yeah. It's almost like a transfer wise for back office. So, you know, that kind of business, they're going to make.
They manage the contracts, the HR issues, the benefits. You know, you can sort of pick and choose what benefits you give them. So there's a parity between countries, so that, you know, then we're then aren't at a disadvantage because that they were using a third party. But, you know, when we started looking at the US, the focus was on New York. But then, you know, why do we have to do that? You know, so we've hired in Texas, in California, talking to people in Arizona. So, you know, the world is very local, as High Street Bank likes to say. So, you know, you can hire anywhere as long as the time zone with that particular partner is compatible.
I think that's doable. Going to be a competitive. Yeah, you got to go at them, don't you? Yeah,
bye,
yeah.
Everybody.
You go, man.
Cheers.
See you later. We are running a bit over time, folks, so we're going to have to kind of move swiftly on. So, Charlotte, I'm going to skip the question to you this time because we're going to go to the questions directly. We've got two questions to answer. We're going to answer them now. Okay, so Simon's talking about what software are you talking about? Gem software. Somebody share that to gem.com, actually. It's the easiest URL ever. I don't know how they managed to get that. They must have spent like most of their Series A buying that thing. Let's go to Luke. Luke saying, okay, is anyone hiring without interviews? So in other words, you have like some sort of person that's, you know, a remarkable reputation. Oh my goodness, you know, this person is amazing. Offer immediately. Anybody doing this?
No.
No,
a bit biased.
No, I mean, we obviously not naming names. We've got someone who's come back to us from seven. Well, we offered him 7 months ago, and he went elsewhere. He's come back to us. We're doing a follow up, not a full interview, because he knows the interview process. But, you know, what's changed in 7 months? What's your motivations for coming back to us? That, you know, these are crucial things.
Yeah. Luke, I think you should do this because he Luke, by the way, runs a recruitment company. So I think you should just go ahead and do it. Just tell us.
Case study.
Tell us what happened. I reckon it'll be okay. I actually think it'll be okay. Okay. I think we're coming to the end of the show. I want to sort of end by each of you kind of thinking about like one tip that you could give to a company that's now looking to recruit recruiters and really struggling. What would you offer them as to say, look, this is one of the things you've just got to get right if you're going to be competitive in this market. Things that you've learned in your own efforts to try and recruit recruiters. Yulia, let's go with you first. Give us a tip for a recruiter of recruiters.
Sure. Well, maybe don't search where everyone is looking, right? I mean, there are so many sources that are not explored. Like, why don't we do more, you know, campus recruitment for recruiters? That's, you know, quite simple.
Yeah, absolutely. LinkedIn, everyone has like repeatedly said LinkedIn, but how many times are you searching for the same things? We're all like putting in the same things. That person who's invisible is just going to get blasted with inbound. By the way, if you're an individual contributor or senior individual contributor, you can expect 3.21 inbound solicitations every week. for new job opportunities. That's whether you've declared yourself available, yes or no. So, you know, you imagine if you're a person that said you're open for work, that's going to go times 10. Or if you're somehow visible up there as a person that's, you know, coming to the end of a contract or whatnot, again, you'd be blasted. So think about other places where you could go and talk to people. I would actually say online communities, for instance, would be a good spot to do that, or even in-person events, as Adam mentioned earlier. Okay, Charlotte, go to you. Give us one bit of advice, please.
I think my one bit of advice would be your investment in your longer term inbound strategy, and specifically with that, your branding and market messaging. Invest in that.
Right. Okay. So basically, you can't afford to ignore basically your story. Like, what it is you're actually telling. You can't just go in with the numbers and say, oh, here's what you're going to earn or whatever. What is the purpose behind your company? Why are you in it? What can they expect when they're in the business? Maybe that also leads to things like, you know, better ways to communicate using videos and stuff like this. Okay. Robert, go to you on this. Give us one tip that you've learned or you picked up in your course. You know what? People did this more. This will work better.
It's to be personable and take the time on that initial reach out. You know, people are getting, you just said 3.21 messages a week. How are you going to stand out from your competitor and have, invest in that time? I know it's fairly easy to blast 50 emails out, but take your time, research that individual. Give them a reason to respond to you and give them a reason why you're approaching them.
You know what, Robert, that's amazing. And I want to sit down on that just a little bit, because if we're all on LinkedIn and LinkedIn does give you like a big lever to pull, if you're just pulling the same lever, just imagine the volume of stuff that's coming out of people. That's not going to work. You can't do generic, I think, in this type of market. You might have to do like individual customization in order to get some sort of response. By the way, people should read that report from Jem, because it does tell you about reply rate, not only open rate, but reply rate, like what causes people to reply. And it seems to me that according to their data, this is all like US San Francisco data as well, by the way, so I'm not sure how portable it is to different contexts, but I suspect the psychology is similar. You do need to have a sequence, like a sequencing effort, a follow-up, basically a systemized way of doing that, because people are so overwhelmed on first message, you can't even count on that landing. It might be the best message ever, but you might not have the person might simply be overwhelmed to pick it up. Okay, that's about it, folks. What an interesting topic of conversation. I would thoroughly recommend everybody follow our marvelous guests here, because they've obviously got some really good insight in terms of how recruiter works. We Brain Food is doing a project on this. What do recruiters want survey? Please support that. Complete it if you haven't done so. Make sure your colleagues do as well. The target is to get the 5,000 completed responses by the end of this month. I think that's a stretch goal, but it's doable because we're already at 1,200 or so, I think. So with a few big pushes, I think we're going to get there. And at the end of it, we should be able to say, hey, listen, the overall global recruiting community generally wants jobs like this. And I think that will really help having conversations with employers of recruiters to say, you know what, you've got to shake this up from where your mindset is, because the entire community is saying this thing. That's about it. I want to say goodbye and good evening to all of our marvelous guests. Yulia, thank you so much for joining the show. Hope you've enjoyed it. Charlotte, thanks for joining us as well. You've been excellent. And Robert, thank you very much for joining us also.
Pleasure.
We'll see you soon.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. Have a good one.
Take care.
Bye. What a great show. Hey folks, I've like massively enjoyed that. Wasn't that amazing? It's a little bit self-referential, because it's recruiters talking about recruiters, but it is such an interesting space to be in. I think going forward, one of the things I may look to do is to think about how do you make recruiters. We had this conversation earlier this week on LinkedIn, and you know, like hundreds of thousands of people commented on this poll, a vast majority were kind of very, very upset about my intimation that you could make a recruiter more easily than we might think. But I think we need to get busy doing that, because it may well be not possible to recruit an experienced person for the job that you need doing. In which case, we have to think, okay, how can we recruit someone that has the personality or the traits, the pre-training, if you like, that's going to translate really well to the recruitment job, and how quickly can we get that person up to productivity? Maybe that's something worth exploring. Talk to some recruitment trainers, figure out, you know, how do you get someone from, you know, a point where they don't know the job to the stage where actually they can operate autonomously to a certain degree. How quickly can you accelerate that? But let me know in the chats there if this would be interesting for you. We'll focus a Brainfuel Live on training recruiters. How do you get from raw material to finished product? Okay, that's about it. We're going to go follow the channel, by the way, if you are interested in this type of conversational content. We'll be back next week, of course. We are actually going to be talking about candidate experience, so kind of adjacent to this as well. Like, what is the good, bad, and ugly of modern candidate experience? What do candidates expect? And are you doing the basic minimum to make sure you're not in the ugly side? So follow the channel. You will get notified when that show comes live. Okay, that's about it. Have a good weekend, everybody.